And welcome to Cloud Cover. Today, I'm joined by
Chris Reisner
and Hashi Bey.
Hashi, yes.
Hashi.
What?
Okay, I got it right. Sorry. No, I feel like sometimes I get it wrong. I think when you first joined, I had issues pronouncing it.
Yeah, you're still correctly.
But Hashi is one of the members of our team that we've actually had here for over a year now, I'd say,
yeah.
Right, Hashi?
Yeah, time flies.
You've been on a couple of times.
This is my second time, I think.
Okay, yeah, a couple.
So. It's going to be much better because he's on it with me now.
Hopefully. But you're here today to talk about what exactly?
Windows Azure Caching.
Okay, yes. So this is the new service we just released.
Yeah, that's it went in preview end of last month. So here I'm going to talk about what it is and what you can do with it.
Yeah, so we do have a number of caching offerings available. Yeah. And in this show, Hashi's going to basically tell you what the differences are between them, mm-hmm. as well as have a deep dive and show some code of how you use the new service.
Yeah, that's the first thing I need to clarify. Yeah. What are the caching options you have and which one you should choose.
Yeah. But as usual, let's jump to the news, and then we'll jump into our main segment, which is Hashi.
Okay, yeah. Right. I'm looking forward to the news.
All right. Okay, so this first one here, basically more options to integrate on-premise networks with AT&T. So we've signed a partnership with AT&T that essentially allows you to bridge your cloud services with an on-prem network. I won't dwell too much on this, but basically the blog's available on WindowsAzure.com. I'd recommend you read it, particularly if you're using services from AT&T and Windows Azure. Next one. This one's sort of cool. I'm not too sort of familiar in the Linux or in this distro Ubuntu space, but Juju now has support for Windows Azure. I'd like to show you this because I went and had a play with it and I was really surprised with how cool it was. So let's take this here, and apparently the website works best in this. So let's drop this in. So what they've got here is a tooling experience that allows you to compose charms, which are basically just images for VMs, together, and then automate the deployment of that to different providers such as Windows Azure. Yeah. And Windows Azure was recently added, but if we come down here, we can see that they've got featured charms, they've got popular charms, and there's also new charms. You can also write your own charms if you want, but a standard one, let's just say like WordPress here, just go and drag it on, confirm that. Move that up a bit. Drag MySQL, WordPress takes a dependency on that. Confirm this guy. And then we can build a relationship between the two. And now that's connected and should be ready to deploy.
So we can actually deploy this to Windows Azure from Juju?
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
Apparently so. I've only had sort of 5 minutes playing with it. That's probably the most basic experience. You can see there, but I think we'll actually do a full episode on this sometime in a few weeks.
Awesome.
To dive deep and have a look at some of the options available there. But certainly really cool and great to see support for Windows Azure here as well. So let me close that. Next one, who's this guy?
This is Vittorio Berto. Wow, I'm going to get this last name wrong. He's probably going to come find me.
Admiral Identity is his real name.
Yes, I believe it is, Mr. Identity.
But let's see, I think this is his new blog, cloudidentity.com. Certainly a wealth of information here.
Let's go to that second one there. So basically, the Active Directory Authentication Library, or ADAL, for .NET has gone GA, so general availability. And basically, this is a library that enables client-side authentication to AD, whether it's Windows Azure Active Directory or Active Directory running on Windows Server, which that requires the RDFS version of Windows Server 2012 R2, or ACS namespace. So you think of this as scenarios where you've got a client application, whether it's a Windows Store app or a desktop app, and you want to access some resource that's been secured by Active Directory, you can drop this library in and it'll kind of handle the whole flow of you having a user authenticate, get back the token and deal with all the token and access information so that you can then access those resources. You can also use it for server-to-server side scenarios where you create an account for a server application that would then talk to your resource. So really great, and makes it a lot easier to talk to Active Directory from your .NET clients.
All right. Deliverable as well as a NuGet package.
And a lot of really great drawings, as we can see.
Yeah. Standard Vittorio form factor, awesome diagrams. We'll have to have him on the show at some point to perhaps walk us through this.
Yeah, that would be great. Yep.
And now, the last one, which is more related to the main segment, is the announcement of the high-performance caching service.
Yep.
So rather than browsing through this article, I think we'll jump to Hashi, and you can walk us through it.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
And now for our feature presentation.
All right, and we're back and ready for Hashi.
Okay, so I'm Hashi. I'm a Windows Azure Technical Evangelist. I'm actually the failover speaker today.
Okay, explain that just a little bit.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Windows Azure caching team cannot make here this time.
Yep.
And as a cloud solution company, right, we have a backup for everything. So I'm the backup speaker.
It's very redundant today.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the failover cluster.
So you will be this afternoon too. But anyhow, sorry.
But I didn't get that.
Redundant.
Okay.
Yeah.
So before I start the content, I will just say a couple of words about why we want to use caching in general.
Okay.
But I don't think I need to sell the idea, because say, for any software environment, the I/O operations are usually slowest. So whenever you see an opportunity to reduce the I/O operation or to make it faster, you should definitely go for it.
Yeah.
For instance, if you compare the I/O performance between a disk and a memory access, it's like a difference between tens of milliseconds and nanoseconds. So it's a tremendous difference.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. So if you have an opportunity to improve your performance by 1,000 times, then why don't you do it? Right.
So best suited, though, for reasonably static data? Reasonably.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah. But say, even for the dynamic data, because you have a low latency accessing the memory cluster, you can do a lot of different access patterns on this.
True.
Okay, so Windows Azure Cache Service, we've been have different offerings over
Hold
time.
On. So these are the different options that are available today.
Yes.
Okay. So let's get this right once and for all for everyone.
Yes. These are three options available today, but it will be changing. Now we have the cache service going in preview.
So this is the one just announced?
Yes, that's last month. In-row cache has been there for a while.
Yes.
So that's the cache cluster you can host in your row instances.
Like your web or worker role within a cloud service, okay.
And the shared caching, that's the one that is going away.
Okay.
It will be retired no later than August next year.
Okay.
August or October. I have a slice on that next slide.
Okay.
So, but the Silverlight portal is going on way earlier, so you won't be able to manage the cache cluster after March 2014.
Okay.
So you're better to do the migration. But I will talk about the migration as well. It's fairly easy.
Okay.
Okay. So here, August 29th, 2014. That's the date it will retire. So we have these three offerings. I'll just do a comparison among the three and explain why we make another one, the cache service.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the hosting mode, both cache service and the shared caching, they are managed by Azure.
Yep.
They are hosted service. The cache cluster is managed by Azure. You don't need to do anything about it. You just subscribe to the cluster, then you can use it.
Right.
The in-row cache is that you need to install some kind of components along with a web role or worker role, so that you can host the cache cluster along with your role instances. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. One is your self-managed, the other two are hosted.
Right.
And in terms of the scope, both cache service and shared caching, they are public, meaning it's a public service you can access from any applications.
Right.
Of course, you need to do authentication. You need to use the security key to authenticate to the service, but otherwise it can be accessed from anywhere. Yep.
So when you say public, you mean I can connect to that from my Windows Azure website, my cloud services, web and worker roles, my VMs, something somewhere else if you really want to.
Java application if you want. Yeah.
Okay.
But the in-row caching is scoped to your cloud service.
Right.
So it's only accessible within the roles in the same cloud service.
Mm-hmm.
which means if you have a cache cluster hosted on your worker role, the web roles and the other worker roles in the same cloud service will be able to access it, but not anyone else.
Yeah, so if you had a website that was part of that solution, say, your web and worker and website with the in-role cache couldn't consume the same data from the in-role cache, right?
Your web role and the worker role will be able to share the cache.
But not the website.
Yeah, because website is not part of your cloud service.
So that's the big differentiating, or one of the big differentiating factors, right?
Okay,
cool.
And in terms of the cluster type, in the case of both a cache service and the in-role cache, the cluster is yours. It's dedicated to you. You have all the control of the resources. But the shared caching basically is a multi-tenant environment. The resource and the memories are shared among the tenants, which means the next point, when you use shared caching, you will be throttled. There's a quota limitation on the number of transactions you can do, on the amount of bandwidth you can use. If you exceed that quota, you will be throttled.
Right.
But the cache preview, which is also a hosted service, it doesn't have any quota or throttling limitations.
Right.
If you think about it, that's huge, right?
Yes.
That's what we provide as a SaaS service, but we don't impose any limitations on it. I mean, you got physical limitations of how much traffic can pump through the network bandwidth, but there's no artificial limitation imposed by the service itself. So this is a tremendous offer.
Yep.
And in terms of named cache, the items starting from this row is kind of at the detailed level, but I'll just go through them quickly. So the named cache meaning within the name within a cache cluster, you can create multiple named caches, like small namespaces.
Yeah.
You can just segment your data horizontally. So both cache service and the in-row cache support the named cache, but it's not supported by the shared caching.
What would be the advantage of using named caching?
To segment your data. For instance, if you have an application, like a multi-tenant application, and it's serving for multiple customers, you may want to create a different named cache for different customers, just to say you can manage each customer data separately.
Great. Yeah.
Can you specify different eviction policies on each of the named cache?
Which one?
So if I had two named caches, could I have a different, say, eviction policy?
Oh yeah,
TTL on
the eviction policy, the notification, the high availability setting, all those are per named cache.
Yep.
So if you have a different data types and different types of data, you can manage them differently based on those policies as well. Yeah, that's a good point. So in terms of a high availability, which means, what does this mean? So the cache cluster is a distributed environment. When you save an item to a cache cluster, the cluster will pick one of the nodes to save your item. Let's say you have three nodes, and you save one item, it may be put into node two, just decided by the cache cluster. If that node fails, you will lose that data.
Right.
What high availability means, when you turn on this option, the cache cluster will actually save your data twice in two different nodes.
Right.
In this case, if one of the nodes fails, you could still get the data from the other node.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the high availability option, which is available in both cache service and in-row cache, but it's not available in the shared caching.
Yep.
And notification, that means you can actually register callbacks to certain cache cluster events, like some items being added, some items being removed or updated, and there's some other events like if a region or a tag being created or those things.
That actually opens up some very cool scenarios for...
Yeah, that enables the event-driven programming mode.
Yeah.
But we'll actually do an example of notification later in this show. It's not the regular event handling as you imagine, but it's fairly similar.
Okay.
So the eviction policy, that means if the cache cluster field itself is pressured, meaning it's containing a lot of data and there's more requests coming in, it may elect to evict some of the items so that it can maintain a healthy state. For the cache service and the in-row cache, you have two options. Basically, you can either disable the eviction, meaning no items will be removed, or you can use the least recently used, meaning the item that is least recently used will be evicted first. But for the shared caching, you only got one option. It's least recently used, and you cannot turn it off. And in terms of TTL, that's the expiration of your message. When you're putting a message, you can specify how long this message should stay in the cache. And at the cache level, you can set this default setting. For both cache service and the in-row cache, you get 10 minutes, and it's configurable. But for the shared caching, it's 24 hours, and it's not configurable. But just to be clear, when you call the add method or put method on the cache, you can override this setting per item. Mm-hmm. For instance, although your cache setting is 10 minutes, you can put an item that live longer or shorter.
Okay.
But that's just the default configuration. And expiration policy, that's how your item will expire after he's put into the cache. Mm-hmm. Never means it doesn't expire. It will live in the cache forever. And if your cache is filled up, then you will get exception if it's filled up. Absolute meaning the expiration window is calculated after the item is put in the cache. For instance, I put in now, it will expire in 10 minutes, and it will expire in 10 minutes. The sliding window means whenever you access that item, the expiration window will reset.
Okay.
So for instance, for my item, it will be expired in 10 minutes, but at 9 minutes, I access it again, then the window is reset to 10 more minutes.
Okay.
So this will keep the more frequently used item into the cache longer.
Yeah.
So you can see there are differences in these three offerings. And now I'm going to explain why we make this cache service. Let's just go through this table row by row to see what is commonly...
Hold on, did we just do that?
No, we're going to go through that again.
Okay.
In this case, we'll actually go through each row and pick what is the desired behavior for a cache cluster.
Right.
For instance, for the hosting mode, probably we want hosted service, right? It's easy to manage. We don't need to manage hosting ourselves.
Right.
So we want that. Scope, what do you pick?
Well, I guess, I mean, depends. If I'm going to have different things, I want to have it to be accessible to all my different services. So within the same cloud service, it seems a little limited, so I'd say public.
Okay, good choice. And cluster type, what do you pick? Dedicated?
Dedicated, of course. Yeah.
It gives you a higher performance and throughput guarantees.
Right.
Quotas, do you want quotas?
No.
And how about all those features, name, cache, high availability notifications? Yeah. Do you want all those features?
Yeah.
So basically, we are taking the good things from the both shared caching service and the in-row cache, and we just shuffled everything to the left. Basically, the cache service is a combination of all the good things you get from these two offerings.
Hmm.
So that's why we make this cache service.
Okay.
Yep. And this is just the overview of the features of the new cache service. First, foremost, of course, it supports a cross-adder on multiple applications. It's not constrained to one cloud service anymore. You can access from your websites, cloud service, and virtual machines. You can access from multiple cloud services and virtual machines.
Hmm.
And high performance, because the cluster is dedicated to you. You don't share a CPU or memory resource with any other tenants. It's your cluster. You own it. It's all dedicated to you, so you get a higher performance. And there's no quota. I can't emphasize this enough. This is huge, right?
Yeah.
How can you provide a service with no quota or throttling? That's just wonderful. And Rich.
I think there is a star there, an asterisk.
Yeah, there. It's constrained by the physical limitations of the network. So the rich features, instead, different from the shared caching, we actually have all the rich features you get from the in-row caching, and we combine with the cache service. And of course, we have the memcache compatibility. I will show a brief demo at the end as well. So the offering, I'll just go really quick. Basically, for the new service, you have three options: basic, standard, and premium. They are different in sizes and the functionalities you can have. For instance, for the basic, you can start with 128 megs, and you can go up to 8 units. Each unit is 128 megs, and so at the maximum, you can get 1 gig.
Right.
Standard is 1 gig to 10 gig, and the premium is from 5 gig to 150 gig. That's really huge.
Yeah.
And named caches, for basic, you can create one, and for standard premium, you can have 10. And if you want high availability, you have to use premium at this point.
So what's the impact of that?
OK. Basically, see, if you imagine that the service hosted by Windows Azure, it's fairly reliable by itself, mm-hmm. right? But say you have a higher probability of hitting a data loss mm-hmm. when you have a lot of data in your cache right. cluster. This is why we enable this high availability in the premium, so that in that, because it's a higher chance that happens,
yeah.
so you can turn on this high availability.
And
as
what's that actually doing, though?
It's replicated okay. data twice to different
okay.
nodes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Within the same data center, I'd assume, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the notification, it's the callback, which we'll go in detail in a moment. So it's available for both standard and premium.
Mm-hmm.
And the price, by the way, this price is a temporary price, I guess, mm-hmm. because this is a preview price.
Yep.
And the price I showed here has a 50% discount built into it.
Right.
So you should double this calculation and then refer to the official pricing site.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably the most important advice. Check out the official pricing
yeah.
site, because if
yeah.
you're watching this maybe 4 months from when we recorded,
yeah.
it could be completely different.
Yeah, it could be completely different.
Maybe
but
more, maybe less, you don't know.
Yeah. But as it stands now, I mean, even with the full price, for instance, for the basic, you get like $25 a month. It's still like half the price of the shared caching mm-hmm. price. Is it cheap? It has no throttling.
Yep.
I mean, that's why we are retiring the old service.
Yep.
So before I go that, I'll jump into the demos as requested by Nick.
Yes, let's see it.
Okay, now we are at the demo. So before I show the code, I'll show you how to provision a new Windows Azure cache cluster,
okay.
which is really easy. You can use the management portal.
Mm-hmm.
We used the shared caching before. You have to use the older portal, but now it's part of the new portal now. So all you need to do is just like creating any other services. You just go to the data services cache and create quick create.
Yep.
Let's say give a name, channel 9, and pick a data center. And here you can pick among the offerings.
Yep. Can you change that? Like as, like for instance, let's say I've got a service, I've deployed it,
mm-hmm.
It's running, I'm in the basic tier, but then you know I start exceeding my needs mm-hmm. in terms of space there. Is it easy to change?
Like, yeah, that's a good question.
It's just a config item or?
Yeah, it's a config yeah. item. Because
okay.
now it's a separate cluster, you
yeah.
can totally manage it separately.
Excellent.
So okay. here I'm just going to pick anything and click on the create to
yep.
create a new cache. But see, because this is a preview environment, it takes a while to
yeah.
provision the cluster. Here, I've already created two. One is the basic, the other is the standard.
One question, what was
yeah.
the cache memory dropdown on the quick create?
Oh, okay.
Was the last option.
So basically, for the each of the offerings, you can pick a different number of units. That's
right.
what we call it. For instance, the standard, the basic is 128 per unit,
yep.
but you can pick up to 8 units.
Mm.
Okay.
Right. So you could have basic offering with just one unit
yeah.
if you wanted.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can change that in the portal
okay.
anytime.
Okay.
So for instance, here I have a basic cluster and a standard cluster. If I open this, you can see just as another other service, I can monitor it, I can configure it, and that's the scale. You're asking.
Yeah.
So
okay,
here,
so if you want to change it.
Yeah, not only I can change the number of units
yeah.
I use, I can also change the different offerings I
okay.
use.
Excellent.
And after you do the scaling, you will see in the configuration tab, you will have different options here. For instance,
okay.
the standard has notification enabled. That's why you can configure here.
Right.
But you can see I don't have high availability here
mm-hmm.
because it's only available to the premium cluster.
Okay.
But if I switch to a basic cluster, you can see I only have very few options here. So, but you can change the setting any time. And there are two pieces of information you need to get in order to use the cache cluster. One is the endpoint. Let me zoom in a little bit. So that's the endpoint you connect to. Remember when you used to use the in-row caching, basically you specify the row name
mm-hmm.
as your cluster address. But because this is a public service, you need to give the whole endpoint.
Right.
And that's the endpoint. And the other thing is that you need a secret key for authentication.
Mm-hmm.
You just click on manage keys. We have a primary key and a secondary key. You can use either if you, in the case of recovery or rolling updates, you can use those keys. So here I'm just going to copy one of the keys. And I will go back to Visual Studio and create my website. Just create a new project. And the internet application.
She's creating a basic MVC application
here? Yes, it's an empty MVC internet application, nothing strange. And I'm actually not going to build any features into it. I'm just showing how to use the cache cluster.
Okay.
So to use the service, you need to get a NuGet package, which is a Windows Azure caching. So you just manage the NuGet package, and you search for caching. And they give you the Windows Azure caching. The current version is 2.1. And it installs. It installs all the necessary assemblies for you, and it modifies your web config file as well, just to bootstrap your configuration process. And if you open this configuration file, go to the end, you can see all the data cache configurations here.
Okay.
The first thing you need to enter is the endpoint address. Which I forgot. If I copy this, I need to copy the key again. Okay.
Okay.
So that's my endpoint. And also because this is a public service, I need authentication enabled. And conveniently, it already creates this item for me. I just replace this guy with my key. I just copy this again. And paste it in here. Okay. No one sees it. I can regenerate anyway. So that's really all you need to do in order to use the cache.
Right.
But usually, for a typical web application, what you often want to use is to use the cache cluster to save your session state or output caches. So for that, we also provide a session state provider out of box.
Okay.
So that you can make your website or cloud service roles stateless because you're externalizing the state. And if you want to enable that, you just uncomment this. And similarly, if you want to use the cache cluster as output caching, you can just uncomment this one. Right, there's no coding for you. And in the controller, what you can do, first you need to get a reference to the cache cluster. And what you do is this data cache, that's the type you get. Equals new data cache. So by default, it's resale configuration file. So here you don't need any parameters to the constructor. Then you just say, let's say where 10 timestamp equals cache get launch time.
Yep.
And if timestamp is now, then I will create a cache. I will add an item. I will say just put launch time, date time. Now, I just put it there. Actually, it's better to do the timestamp equals date time now. Then I just put this timestamp. Then the viewback message, I'll just set it to the timestamp. So here, what I'm doing, I'm recording when the first instance of my website is launched.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if I run this, it should work without an exception, and we should see when the first instance was launched. Okay, it seems it's launched. See, I'm showing the time. See, if I refresh the page, it's not refreshed because that's the launch time. It's in the cache. So I'm just reading it back in this case. So that's the first demo. This is how easy it is to use in the website. If you used Windows Azure caching before, you can see this is exactly the same way as you use in the cloud service.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really straightforward.
So the code is identical. The only thing that's different is the config, like adding the key.
No, even the configuration
the config is identical.
Yeah, even the configuration is the same. You mean in terms of the cloud service and websites?
And shared. No. I'm saying between the new Windows Azure cache and the shared cache. So I'm saying if I'm one of those people out there that are using shared cache and I have to migrate off that, the code remains the same. The data cache class is identical.
Yeah.
Does the config change slightly?
No, the config, I believe it's the same as well.
Okay.
But the code, what you need to do is to uninstall the previous cache NuGet and install the new one.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
But
so
in terms
minor
of
change.
Yeah.
Yep. Point to the new endpoint as well, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the first demo. How much time do we have? Because
that's
I have
okay. Yep, we got some time.
I have I just despaired. yeah, because I have many demos, I think I'll skip someone. So this is one of the simple demos of the how to use the cache in website.
Okay.
Now I'm going to create a slightly more complex one, is to use a cloud service. So in this case, I'm actually going to create an untiered application with a web front end and a work row as a back end.
Okay.
What we used to have is that if you want the web row and the work row to communicate with each other, usually you can use like a resource queue or other queue message to pass the jobs back and forth.
Okay.
But what we can use is that to use the what is called a shared database or shared storage pattern, which means they will have access, read and write access to the shared repository.
Yep.
In this case, they can exchange data in this way. Of course, this is a much more tighter coupling because they both has to know what's the data layout in the cache and they have to know the exact format and the key. But the programming is simple. Basically, they can just randomly read and write items in the cache. So instead of using the queue, when you have to use the first in, first out order to handle the jobs.
But there would be one small danger in that if you're not in the premium tier, right, with the high availability on, like in terms of data loss?
Oh yeah, I mean, it totally depends on the on your scenario. I mean, if you want a guaranteed message delivery, you still need to use a Swiss bus.
Yep.
But say for this kind of pattern, you get easy coding and maybe faster access, but you do lose something.
Okay. Well, there's potential too.
Yeah. Here I have a web row, and here just add a worker row to it.
Now the cache worker role option that was in that dialogue is the in-role caching.
Yeah, that's the in-role caching, yes. You can use that as well, but now we're just going to use the common service. And for this, I'm not going to build a complete solution either. I'm just going to show you the worker role because I want to show how to code the notification part.
Mm-hmm.
How the notification works is that because it's not actually same process. The Windows Azure caching is a separate service outside, so it's not a really an event that got triggered in a worker role. Instead, the worker role, the client library will actually periodically pull the cluster to find out changes.
Okay.
By default, I think it pulls for changes every I think 5 minutes. It's a fairly long time period.
Yeah.
So if in the last 5 minutes you have these items added, it will get a callback invoked. But in here, I'm going to change that default behavior to like 5 seconds so we can get a faster response. So here, I'm just going to use, remember when I used to create the data cache? Okay, sorry. I have to add the NuGet first to get the types. Okay, now I got the types. I remember when I used to create a data cache, I just used the default constructor equals new data cache. But now in this case, I want to customize the behavior of my client, so I need to do a little more complex things. First, I need to create, I have to look at my cheat sheet because the class name is a bit long. So first, I need to create a notification properties. Notification properties. Sorry. I need to put the data cache factory configuration. If I can type that correctly, data cache factory.
Using a C on cache.
Oh, no. Okay. So I need to create this config. Basically, this allows me to customize the my client library behavior. So in this configuration, equals new. Then I'll say config. Then it says no. Geez, I can't type anymore. Notification properties equals new. Data notification properties, 1,000 time span from seconds, let's say 5 seconds. What I'm doing here is that I'm instructing the client library to say instead of polling server for changes every 5 minutes, I'm overriding this behavior to 5 seconds.
Yep, and the 1,000.
1,000 is means how many changes I can accumulate maximally. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So for the last 5 seconds, if there's a 1,000 changes, mm-hmm. I can get them all.
Okay.
Yeah. So now I have this configuration. I need to create a data cache factory. Factory equals new factory. Then give this configuration file. Then I can use the data cache equals factory. I can get a cache if I give a name. I can get any named cache,
yep.
Like ABC,
yep.
If I created the cache. Otherwise, I can just use the get default cache, which gets me the default cache.
Yep.
When you create a new cache cluster, there's always a default cache created for you. So, so that's all you need to do to create this kind of cache. Then you can register a callback. Let's say, in this case, I'm interested in events when a new item is added to my cluster. So you can say add cache level callback. You can see there are many callbacks at different levels. So in this case, I'm saying I'm getting a cache level callback. And when the item is added, I will call this callback. And this is a function with a lot of parameters. You can get the name of the cache, the region of the cache, the key of the item, the version, as well as what kind of operation. And also, there's an identifier for this callback. If you want to cancel this callback, you have to use this handle to disconnect this callback.
All right.
Then within this callback, you can do anything. For instance, you can just say cache get key, right? So I'm not going forward with this,
yep.
But you can see how you can enable this event-driven programming mode in your application.
And there's no change from the producer side where I'm writing data to the cache.
Yeah, you just say data get put.
So,
yeah.
So it's just all the same code for the producer
yeah.
and the consumer yeah, then, has this
and,
slight.
Yeah, and nothing to do with the producer.
Okay.
Yes. So that's
great.
The second demo. I think the third demo will be even faster. That's the memcached one. But
right.
Before I go that, I want to show something else. I'm going to jump back to the management portal. And on the startup page, you can see there's a Excel sheet that's called a capacity planning sheet, which helps you to decide which kind of offering you want to use and how many units you can use.
Can you pop that open, actually?
Yeah, it's right there.
Look at that.
Yeah,
wow. Well prepared.
So this is the Excel sheet with the macros enabled, so you can just enter. It allows you to enter up to 10 different data types.
Right.
And for instance, here, by default, it gave me some data. But here, I would say my object size is much bigger. And you can see now the basic option is not feasible anymore.
Yep.
And if I change it back, you can see now it's recommended.
Okay.
I can use this. And it's also decided by the features. For instance, if I want the notification feature, it will tell you actually the basic doesn't support the notification feature.
All
right. Right. And you can change the data based on your, the number of reads or writes. It's just a little convenient tool for you to estimate how much you need to subscribe.
I love that it says that it's infeasible. That's just a great word.
Okay, so that's that. So for the Memcache support, I mean, Windows Azure caching, we have our own proprietary protocols. Mm-hmm. We use our own protocol to access the cache cluster. But the Memcache is a standard protocol. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is to convert the two protocols. And you can do this in two different ways. One is to use a server-side gateway, which converts the protocol on the server side. Mm-hmm. The other is to use a client shim, which is a light library and help you to convert the protocol. At this point, when this episode is being recorded, you can't use the server gateway on the server side yet. Yeah. Yet. I can't say for the team if it will be available on GA, but that's my hope. For now, you have to use the client-side shim, which you can acquire easily by installing a NuGet package.
Right.
And here, the scenario I'm going to show is actually a Tomcat server hosted on a Windows Azure Worker role. And the Tomcat server has a servlet running on it. And the servlet will use session state provider to save some state to the session. And the session state provider, in turn, will talk to the Windows Azure Memcache shim, so it can be hooked up to the Windows Azure cache service. And that's the complete diagram over there. So here, on the worker row, I expose the public endpoint, mm-hmm. which allows you to access the Tomcat server. And internally, that request will be forwarded to my Tomcat server process mm-hmm. running on the worker row. And the Tomcat server is hosting the servlet, which uses a memcached session manager. This is nothing Windows Azure specific. This is just regular Tomcat with a regular memcached session manager. There's nothing Azure specific. And the Azure specific part is that I also installed the memcached shim on the same mm-hmm. box. And the shim actually it exposes a local endpoint that your memcached client can connect to. This line I'm showing here, this is the memcache protocol line. Right. Basically, your client is talking to this shim as if this shim is a memcache server.
Right.
And the shim in turn converts the protocol calls to our protocol and work with the Windows Azure caching service. So it's a bit of a complex. Fortunately, I have written a complete workthrough on my blog. It's a two-part article. Basically, it assumes you don't know Tomcat or servlet coding in general. So basically, it works through all the steps of how to install Tomcat, how to create a servlet, how to enable session, and then how to migrate that to Windows Azure.
So can you do, I guess the reason why someone would want to do this mm-hmm. is if they've got an existing solution that mm-hmm. uses the Memcache protocol yep. to read and write from cache.
Yeah.
This is an interim solution until we have a server-side
shim
of some description.
This is a working solution that you can use in your production. It's just one of the options. Mm-hmm. If you have the server-side gateway, of course, you don't need the shim anymore. But you can definitely use the shim as it is.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And actually, I'm going to show you the Java-side code. This is the servlet code. Given that our audience is mainly .NET, I'm mm-hmm. not going into details. But the one point I'm going to make is that you can see the reference, the libraries, the jar files. Right. There's nothing Windows Azure specific, right? There's no Azure caching or anything. I'm just using the regular sessions, and I'm saving one of the counters. Basically, mm-hmm. I'm incrementing the counter every time I click on the button. And if I show you the configuration file, you can see that this is just how you configure. This is a memcache session state provider. And I'm just configuring it as if it's a regular memcache cluster. So here, the address I'm pointing is actually my memcache shim address. But as far as the client concerns, it's talking to a memcache server. And the result is actually very exciting. Basically, that's the website. You click submit. Okay. You can see the number went from 10 to 1. Yep. That's because my previous cache items expired.
Yep.
Yeah, but if I keep clicking, it will just go up. Yeah.
There you go.
So I think certainly a very powerful service now.
Yeah.
Definitely resolve some of the limitations that people were seeing before with the shared cache.
Yeah.
Worth going and having a look and trying out. Before we go today, Hashi, I'd like you to do one thing, and that's to plug your Channel 9 Cloud Pattern series.
Thank you. Actually, before we do that, I want to plug yet another thing.
Plugging.
Plug. So this is the Twitter Reader demo I built like a year ago.
I
think some of you may have seen this demo several times in different occasions. Basically, I migrate this application to Windows Azure Caching in about like 5-6 minutes. Basically, I just uninstalled the old NuGet, installed the new NuGet, and it just worked.
Awesome. Nice.
And here is the Cloud Pattern series.
Right.
This is the series I've been working on. There aren't many episodes here, but there are a lot more coming. For instance, there will be one released probably next week or so on the high availability service bus, which is a really important topic to talk about. So you could expect more the patterns and practice sessions in here. And the way I'm organizing this series is that I want to make it open so that anybody, if you want to share something, share some experience, or want to share a pattern that you think is useful, definitely reach out to us. We can actually get your content in if it's appropriate.
Okay, great. Excellent. Yeah. Certainly worth watching if you're building any type of enterprise solution on Windows.
Yeah, it's heavily enterprise-oriented. For instance, the last two episodes, one is on the competing consumer. Basically, it allows you to do a loose coupling and a dynamic scaling to your application. And the priority queue is a very typical scenario where your jobs has different priorities, and how do you implement that on the Windows Azure platform.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. And, well, thanks for coming on the show today, Hashi.
You're welcome.
Always a pleasure to have you.
Okay.
You always bring great material.
All right.
So thank you very much. So check out the new cache service in preview on Windows Azure, and also check out Hashi's Cloud Pattern series. So thank you for watching. You can get us on Cloud Cover Show. What's your Twitter alias, Hashi?
Hashi by 2010.
Okay, there you go.
It's a long
follow time. Hashi if you want updates to anything cool that he's working on. And follow the show on Facebook. Thanks for watching.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.